You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly political chat with the National Party's Jamie Lee Ross.
Andrew Bailey, how are you going today?
Oh, very good, Kelly.
Good. Sorry about that intro. Not actually you today, but not actually Jamie Lee. So I just wanted to get straight into some of National's coming up election policies that they're announcing to do with the environment. So obviously fresh water is a big one this election. So we know through nationwide protests and presence of activist groups like Bung Labor that a critical question that a lot of Kiwis are wanting the answer to is why water bottle corporations can take our fresh water and export it without having to pay royalties.
Yeah, so it's always been the case that people can use water and for various different activities. What we've seen is that a number of new companies come in who are taking over existing consents. So we're concerned about it, and what we've done is we've asked a group to look at it in more detail. It's on the face of it sounds bad, but to how you deal with it is the issue, because once you start saying to one particular group you have to pay a tax on it or whatever it might be, then how does that ripple? Because the issue with bottled water, if it's straight bottled water, that's fine. But a lot of the bottling companies, such as making Coca-Cola or making beer, they use large volumes of water as well. So getting a clear definition around it is quite a difficult issue, and that's why we've asked a technical group to look into it.
So the public sentiment, I think, here is not about maybe the quantity or the statistics, but it's the sense that something precious, you know, in New Zealand that is being exploited for commercial gain, and there's no benefits coming back to New Zealand communities or back into the water bodies that are being extracted from. So just wondering how National feels about, not, you know, taking a very scarce resource from New Zealanders and there not being any sort of repayment for that.
Yeah, so you've just raised the issue, which is if it's a foreign-owned bottling company, should they be paying a tax or a royalty on it? If it's a locally owned bottling company, should they? And so in that introduction, that's just what you raised there. So the issue is, how do you work through that? And so on the face of it, it's a very easy issue, and we all understand the public sentiment. But actually, when you start to get in underneath it, you need to work out where the point of differentiation. So if we end up saying, let's stop foreign owners taking New Zealand water and sending it overseas, that's pretty easy. Are you going to just do with bottled water or carbonated water, or are you going to now talk about other drinks? Because a lot of our bottling companies are also owned overseas, but they supply the New Zealand market. So is it just the New Zealand portion, or is it the overseas portion? That's why I'm saying the issue is a little bit more complicated than most people think. But we understand the sentiment. We understand the issue that people are worried about.
So also, talking about how you're going to plan to clean up rivers and lakes to make them swimmable. So we're moving to a system which requires councils to improve the swimmability of their rivers and lakes over the year. And so under your new proposal, over 50,000 kilometres of waterways will be improved for swimming, which we will see more places that are suitable for swimming more often. How do you plan on doing this?
Well, let's go back to a little bit of stuff on it. So, Kelly, it wasn't until we introduced the measurement of water that suddenly the issue became apparent. And so all this debate now about water quality has only become about because National Party introduced required measurement of water quality bodies around New Zealand. Because that then gives you the position, the start point to actually work out which are the waterways that are clean and which are the dirty. So that's been the most important thing that National's done, is actually bringing this issue out into the public fore. Mm-hmm. What we've require now of councils is that we have specified the minimum level, and where we set it is that we require 90% of all rivers and lakes to be swimmable by 2040. Now most people don't understand what that means, but that the level that we've introduced, it takes into account E. coli and all the different other things, nitrates and water, is actually on par with the best European standards. So the New Zealand standard is on par with the European standards for water. And what we're requiring councils now to do is go away and measure their water quality each of their waterways in their catchment areas. And if it is below that minimum requirement, which the government has specified, they then have a requirement either to do something about it or actually required to go and consult with the community as to why they were going to keep it below that minimum specified level, and that's for the community to make that decision. So this is a way of making sure that councils start to really address this question very quickly. Now, alongside that, the government's put up $400 million, and it's already been invested. In fact, we only announced a couple of weeks ago another $44 million to going up, cleaning up specific lakes and rivers, mm-hmm. and was part of a $100 million fund that we're allocating. And also, apart from the $400 million that the government's put up, it's estimated that farmers across New Zealand have voluntarily spent another $500 million already cleaning up many of the waterways in the rural areas. The only other point I would say to you, people focus on the agriculture sector. Unfortunately, many of our urban waterways are also suffering from poor water quality.
Mm. So what is your stance, obviously, speaking on the agricultural side and a lot of people thinking that that's the main problem. So Labor has said that they will introduce a levy on irrigation and a lot of farmers are unhappy about that. What's your stance on that?
Well, I represent the electorate of Hinua, which is all the vegetable growing area of Pukekohe, Bombay, all those beautiful red soils that you see. And I can tell you that the growers in my area are very, very concerned about it, because we don't know what the tax is that Labor are proposing. At one point, one member was saying it was going to be a lot higher, and now they've come back and said it's only going to be a few cents. We don't know. And, of course, that's all up for conjecture until after the election, when they're going to get together and make a decision. So my growers are very, very concerned about it, because the impact will be that you and I, when we go into the vegetable shop and buy onions, potatoes, whatever, which are all grown out in Pukekohe, you will be paying a higher price for it. Now, their argument is we should tax these people and we'll use the money. At the moment, most of these farmers and growers, and I know them, I've been around many of their properties, are doing a tremendous amount of this precision farming now. That means that water's not wasted, agriculture use is minimised, fertiliser applications are minimised to the extent possible, and they are progressively moving to it. And as I said before, $500 million has been invested by the industry. So it's really a question of approach. We don't want to tax people, because that's going to hit you and I in the back pocket when we go to the supermarket.
So moving on to climate change, National's climate change vision, the New Zealand Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment is calling on the government to instate a climate change commission that will be a watchdog of sorts in making sure New Zealand remains on target with the commitments it made in the Paris Agreement. And all other parties in Parliament have agreed that it would be beneficial to have this independent and transparent commission. But is this something that National would look to establish, as they haven't actually voiced any support for that?
Yeah, so I co-chair the Blue Greens, which is the National Party environmental group, and that's made up of nearly half of all our MPs who have an active involvement in the Blue Greens movement. I also am a member of Globe, and we have a number of National Party MPs who sit on the Globe party, which is, your listeners probably don't know what that means. So there is a cross-party group of all MPs from all the parties who have come together and have looked at all the different issues around climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the proposals is that we adopt this UK model, where there's an independent group that sets targets way out into the future and then gives that to the government of the day, and the government of the day then works out how they're going to meet the decreasing carbon targets that the this group determine.
Mm-hmm.
We're an active member of that. In fact, Honourable Paula Bennett, she's met with our group. And in fact, it was the National Party Blue Greens group that invited Lord Devon out earlier this year to come to our conference, where we had 200 to 300 people, to talk about how this arrangement works. So we're actively engaged in the debate. And I'm well aware of the Parliamentary Commission of Environment's report on it. I've read it and listened to her presentation. And so the best thing about this is that MPs from across the House are working collaboratively, because this shouldn't be seen as a political issue from every 3 years. this is a long-term issue, and we need to get it right for all New Zealanders.
Yeah, agreed, because I think, obviously, that the New Zealand Parliamentary Commission is saying that the Paris Agreement isn't a binding agreement, so obviously we need something that will be an incentive for successive governments to make this a priority, and I think that's the idea behind this commission, is that it's transparent and it's separate from the state. Is that not something that National wants to endorse?
Yeah, I might correct you a little bit, because we've committed, New Zealand was one of the first to sign up to the Paris Accord. So Paula was one of the first to fly over and ratified it. Needed a minimum of 56 countries to ratify it. We were in that first batch of countries. So New Zealand took a leadership role, and we've signed up to the 30% decrease in emissions based on 2005 levels to be achieved by 2030. We have now agreed to do that as a country. So that's not, we can't backtrack from that. What this group has been set up in England does is it actually takes a long-term view on how countries and the UK carbon emissions are tracking. And then it makes sure that measures are going to reports back to public in the public domain, so everyone knows what's going on. But the tactics around how it's achieved is for the government of the day to actually determine what incentives they put in place or what other investments they put in place to make that transition to a lower carbon economy.
So currently New Zealand has no greenhouse gas targets in law, and putting climate change targets into legislation makes current and future governments more accountable for, you know, reducing emissions, and that will be sort of a follow-on incentive. Is National looking at putting anything in law for this as a priority?
But again, that's what we've signed up with the Paris Accord. So we've set...
That's not obviously legislation. I'm thinking, you know, national policy in our country.
Yeah, but this is the government sign the accord, sign the Paris Agreement. So it's a binding agreement. So at the moment we produce about 80 odd million tons of emissions a year. And what we're trying to do is to decrease that over time. And we've got the target is we have to meet, and what we've signed up to do is to reduce that by 30%, the 2005 level, by 2030. So it's quite an ambitious target. It's going to take a lot of investment to get there.
We're also looking, National has said, we're also looking at how we can reduce emissions in other sectors such as agriculture and transport. How are you guys going about that at the moment?
Well, we've already targeted air emissions. Jet planes actually produce reasonably high emissions. We've also just recently put in place a banning over time of hydrochlorofluorocarbons, which are really potent gas. So everyone talks about methane. These ones are a couple of hundred times more severe than the normal type of gas that's emitted. So we're doing that. We've targeted introducing a significant amount of new electric vehicles into it and using the government as the lever to do that. So we want to get 64,000 cars, electric cars, on the road by 2021. And recently we've announced that the government's going to take a role of that. Because by buying the first of those cars, what that does is open up the second-hand market for that. And then that's how we're going to get more cars across the fleet, because at the moment we have a very slow turnover of the national fleet in New Zealand. Mm. And the other area, of course, the investment that's been put into public transport, particularly rail, is significant. So just recently we've announced in the last budget, nearly $1 billion into rail, and we've just announced that if we get into office, we'll be doing further electrifications down to my area in Pukekohe, triple laning in the rail link between Westfield and Wiri and Auckland, and further electrification down in Wellington. So there's a big investment going to public transport, and that's another way of doing that.
So the other side of that question kind of was the agricultural part. Obviously, yep. Agriculture is the highest, well, in 2015 was true. The highest greenhouse gas emitter in New Zealand, and that takes up about half the amount of the greenhouse gas emissions in New Zealand. Yep. Is there something in place or going to be put in place?
Yeah, and you're right. Greenhouse emissions from agriculture accounts for just under half. What New Zealand's doing, what our approach is that we want to be a world leader in reducing agricultural emissions. And what we've done is we've partnered with what's called the Global Alliance Research, and we're putting a significant amount of money so into that, because we believe that if there's a lot of countries working on things like how do you reduce transport emissions and all those other different types of emissions. We believe we can be a world leader in taking the research into reducing emissions from agriculture. So if you take a classic dairy cow, you've got a lot of emissions that come out of them belching, and obviously emissions coming out from the other end.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got the impact of nitrous oxide that comes out of the manure and the, when a cow goes wheeze. And those are the areas that New Zealand is investing a lot of money. So some of the technology you're looking at is different types of plants, the grasses that produce lower methane. You also have different, if you look at the attributes of certain cattle, individual cows, you find they naturally produce less methane. So how do we have dairy cows in New Zealand that produce less methane? And then there's a whole lot of other issues, like what do you do with the manure patches? If you get to them within a short period of time, and how do you treat it to reduce the emissions that come out of it? That's where we're putting a lot of emphasis and money into to make it actually happen. And if we believe we can be a world leader on that, and all the countries who've got agriculture industries around the world can adopt it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Andrew. Have a lovely afternoon.
Hey, thanks, Kelly.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.